Welcome to the Bardcast. It's Shakespeare, you dick. We are your hosts. I am the Wicked Witch of the West, Lisa Ann Goldsmith.
And I am the Wicked something or other, Owen Thompson.
Today's episode is...
It's not nearly as cool. I'm sorry. It's not nearly as cool. You guys, Lisa Ann is currently in rehearsal for this kick-ass production of The Wizard of Oz. Do you want to give that information, by the way, where people can see that streaming? If you're listening to this early enough?
I don't have the streaming information yet, but we'll certainly let you guys know on a future podcast. But it is being performed at Heinz Field, home of
Heinz
the Steelers.
Motherfucking Field.
It's big. It's very big and pretty exciting. But I will let you guys know where you can stream it when I have that information. But
yeah, you better let me know, bitch.
Of course I will. Does that mean you're the Wicked Bitch of the East? What does that mean?
Sure. You know what? Let's go with that.
So today's episode is Wasted Shakespeare. We have read, as we've mentioned before, over 2/3 of the canon over the last year, and we noticed that there's a whole lot of substance abuse in Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah. There's some serious partying going on in Shakespeare plays.
That's right.
And sonnets as well, actually.
That's right. So we decided to do an episode called Wasted Shakespeare. So the question is, did Shakespeare himself use substances when he was writing these plays?
Well, you know, there's a fine tradition of him hanging out at the Mermaid Tavern with all of his pals. I mean, obviously unprovable, but, you know, I mean, it's certainly fair to presume that Shakespeare liked a little drinky winky, especially when you consider that people in Shakespeare's time, and this is a fun fact anyway, they were drinking all the time because, and the reason they would drink fermented cider as a regular beverage. And the reason for, and that actually continued up until I think maybe as late as the 19th century throughout Europe and even America, because drinking water was not safe.
That's right.
There was, or I should say water was not safe to drink normally because it had all kinds of crap in it.
Yeah, they could get all kinds of nasty bugs from drinking the water. So yeah, they drank booze as a basic everyday occurrence. That's kind of like when I went to China, we drank a lot of Chinese beer because the water wasn't safe to drink.
Oh, no.
although it was hard to get a cold beer. Qing Bing Piju is cold beer, please.
Wow, say that again.
Qing Bing Piju. But we do have, perhaps, a little bit of speculation that Shakespeare may have used several drugs besides alcohol. Research published in the South African Journal of Science in 2001 revealed that there were residues of cocaine, marijuana, and myristic acid, which is a nutmeg-derived hallucinogen, in 17th century clay pipe fragments that were dug up from the garden of Shakespeare's home in Stratford-upon-Avon.
Yeah, that's New Place. Not the home that he was born in, but they dug that up in New Place, which actually there's no house there anymore, but it's a lovely place to visit.
That's right. And as if the idea of the world's favorite wordsmith getting high wasn't interesting enough, the cocaine discovery significantly predated the previous earliest evidence of cocaine in Europe.
Yeah, that's fucking crazy.
That's right.
Yeah, Francis Thackeray, the anthropologist behind that clay pipe analysis, even applied in 2011 to exhume Shakespeare's skeleton to try to determine whether he was indeed a pothead. Come on, guys, we hope that's true.
Oh God, I hope that's true.
And they also wanted to determine, of course, the cause of death. And Thackeray said the teeth could have been telling. His quote is, if we find grooves between the canine and the incisor, that will tell us if he was chewing on a pipe as well as smoking. But Shakespeare's tomb, of course, famously bears an explicit warning against just this kind of proposal. What it says on his tomb is, blessed be the man that spares these stones, and cursed be he that moves my bones. So nobody has, you know, exhumed that skeleton or what's left of it.
Well,
and prob-
Eventually, the Church of England gave permission. But when they opened up the tomb, they found his skull missing.
I was going to say, didn't they find that the skull was gone?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
so interesting. They had
no teeth to work through. But they also wondered if, as for his cause of death, was it alcohol related? Because John Ward, who was a vicar at the Holy Trinity Church in Stratford, where Shakespeare is buried, wrote in his diary, "Shakespeare, poet Michael Drayton, and Ben Jonson had a merry meeting, and it seems drank too hard, for Shakespeare died of a fever there contracted." But that entry was made 50 years after the event, so that casts some doubt on
it. Yeah, that's part of the Shakespeare legendarium.
That's,
you know,
right.
I mean, I've heard that story for years, that he got drunk with Ben Jonson and Drayton and died. I mean, maybe it happened, but who knows?
Who knows?
It's a fun story.
It is a fun story. But there's alcohol all through Shakespeare's plays. I mean, my goodness, Falstaff being the most famous of those drunken characters, which you've played, Owen.
I have played Falstaff, and yes, he drinks a lot. It's actually, you know, the truth is, because when I played Falstaff, it was in an outdoor production in the middle of the summer. So you can imagine that it was basically hotter than the devil's scrotum all the time. So, you know, obviously it was just water in those tankards, but I was mighty glad to have an excuse to drink a little water throughout the show, let me tell you.
I'm sure.
But of course, Shakespeare has Falstaff famously drinking sack all the time.
That's right.
Or more specifically, Falstaff even has a kind of ode to Sherris sack, which is a forerunner of sherry, of course. But sack itself, you hear people calling for sack all through Shakespeare. Falstaff is only the most famous and constant one. But sack is an antiquated wine term that refers to white fortified wine imported from mainland Spain or the Canary Islands. And there were different kinds of sack. There was Canary sack from the Canary Islands, Malaga sack from Malaga, Palm sack from the Palma de Mallorca, and specifically Sherris sack from Jerez de la Frontera. And the term Sherris sack...
Can you say that again, please?
Jerez de la Frontera. Prepare to die. So the term Sherris sack later gave way to sherry as the English term for fortified wine. And since sherry is practically the only one of these wines still widely exported and consumed, sack is commonly but not quite correctly quoted as an old synonym for sherry.
That's right. And we'll talk about like the top 10 drinks in Shakespeare's time in his plays. But I wanted to mention that, and this is a call to my dear friend, Holly Beth, who has passed on. But Prince Hal in Henry IV, Part 1, calls Falstaff the villainous, abominable misleader of youth. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, isn't that what was her sobriquet, was it not?
It was, and I was the youth. Speaking of marijuana. But so each of Shakespeare's 38 plays has at least one mention of alcoholic drinks. So they are deeply embedded in his writings. A character's choice of drink is often an indicator of their social position or character, and also of the fashions and the practices of the age. So ale and beer were the first one. Ale was a traditional mild flavored drink popular with everyone, including children, and was drunk, as Owen was talking about, from breakfast throughout bedtime. It provided a ready source of vitamin B. Ale was brewed at home as well as by commercial brewers. But beer at the time was a recent introduction from Holland where they added hops. That addition was initially seen as an adulteration and viewed with a good deal of suspicion in England, but it gradually took home. So,
Of course it did.
Right. In Shakespeare's time, beer would have been a relatively sweet and fruity drink, with ale a lighter option.
Yeah, most. And wine in general was sweet.
That's right.
Or at least, like the sack that's called for is almost certainly is quite a sweet wine.
Right. And there was no shortage of places to enjoy a pint either. A survey of 1577 counted over 16,000 alehouses, taverns, and inns across England and Wales for a population of just 4 million people. So that is one tavern for every 250 people. That's pretty impressive.
Where do I sign?
Another famous drink was aqua vitae. Now, that is likely to cover most
water
forms of spirits.
Water of life.
That's right. So it could be a brandy or a form of whiskey. It's mentioned six times by Shakespeare, and it's always talked of as a restorative or a therapeutic drink in contrast to wine or beer. Like the nurse in Romeo and Juliet asks for it twice. The first time when she explains the death of Tybalt and Romeo's banishment, and the second time when she discovers the apparently dead Juliet in her
bed.
Yeah,
but don't you get the feeling, I mean, I get the feeling in Romeo and Juliet anyway, when the nurse calls for aqua vitae after those events, that it's sort of like, you know, in those old movies when somebody faints and they're like, oh, get her some brandy. I'm like, is it really a restorative or is it just an excuse to get drunk?
She's a big old drunkard. You know she is.
I think so, man.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, that explains that whole rambling thing about, you know, when she's talking about Juliet, how she fell backwards and all.
Oh, and
stuff.
Her daughter. Yeah. Well, yeah. Listen, the nurse is a chatterbox. Let's face it.
She is. Another famous drink would have been Bordeaux or Claret. But wine was a luxury in Shakespearean England, and it wasn't available to all because as an imported product, it costs about 12 times more than beer or ale. So it's the kings and the courtiers that generally get to drink it in his plays. Claret was a much lighter drink than we would expect from a modern red Bordeaux, would be closer to a modern rosé. In Henry IV, Part II, the rebel leader...
They watered the wine most of the time.
They did, because it was so expensive. But yeah. Like in Henry IV, Part II, the rebel leader, Kate, orders that the sewers of London should, quote, run nothing but claret wine the first year of our reign, which is interesting. But there's a symbolic quality to the mention of claret in that play, because in the 12th century, Bordeaux and the Gascony area became English territory with the marriage of Henry Plantagenet to Eleanor of Aquitaine. And so Bordeaux wines were sent then in large quantities to England.
The Hundred Years' War being fought over French territory, I'm sure those English nobles didn't want to lose all that yummy Bordeaux wine.
That's right. And Owen talked about sack, which was a forerunner of sherry. It became just a broad, all-over term for a variety of sherry-style wines, some fortified, some sweet. But the sherry sack was the best known. And you talked about canary sack. According to Shakespeare, it was a, quote, marvelous searching wine, and it perfumes the blood ere one can say, what's this? Which I think is funny. Sir Toby and Sir Andrew in Twelfth Night favor canary over sherry, while Falstaff, although he drinks canary, does prefer sherry sack. And then there's Malmsey, which is a rich, sweet, fortified wine, which in the 16th century originated in Greece. In later centuries, it became associated with Madeira, but not in Shakespeare's time. It is mentioned in Love's Labour's Lost and in Henry IV, Part II, but its most infamous mention is in Richard III.
Ah, poor Clarence.
Right, when Richard orders the execution of his brother, the Duke of Clarence, who had plotted against him with the Lancastrians.
And he's also he's setting up Clarence, you know, because Clarence is, you know, in between him and the throne because he's his older brother.
That's right. And the assassins hatched this plan to drown him in a butt of that wine. They say, quote, take him on the costard with the hilts of thy sword and then throw him into the Malmsey butt in the next room. And he's already incarcerated in the Tower of London, and Clarence innocently asks for a cup of wine at the end, and one of the murderers responds, you shall have wine enough, my lord, anon.
In Shakespeare being Shakespeare, of course, that scene opens with him having a lengthy monologue about a dream in which he drowned.
Yeah, and he does.
To your point about Malmsey and wine in general being a drink of the nobility, it's also a touch of irony that the Duke of Clarence, who was a very high noble indeed, is murdered by being drowned in a luxury item such as wine.
That's right. Then there's metheglin. Metheglin was a spiced mead with its origins in Wales, fermented from honey with the addition of cloves and herbs. It was used as a tonic and largely confined to the wealthier members of society as well. It's only mentioned twice in Shakespeare, once in Love's Labour's Lost and once in The Merry Wives of Windsor, as being drunk by our dependable guide to drinking, Falstaff.
Well, you know, he's an equal opportunity drunk.
That's right. He is accused of, quote, given to fornications and to taverns and sack and metheglins. It's not in commercial production anymore, despite a resurgence in the interest in mead. But that's because it sounds sort of medicinal and chemical.
Metheglin? Yeah. Sounds like mescaline.
It does sound like mescaline. And then there's muscadel, which is rich and sweet from muscatel grapes. It's drunk by Petruchio in The Taming of the Shrew. And then there's posset. In Elizabethan times, posset was a drink of hot milk.
A posset
was a drink of hot milk curdled with ale or wine, generally flavored with spices, probably the addition of some sugar. Lady Macbeth famously uses a poisoned version of a posset to entice the grooms outside King Duncan's quarters so that they sleep through Macbeth's murder of the king. She says, "The doors are open and the surfeited grooms do mock their charge with snores. I have drugged their posset," she says.
You know what? When we did the episode where we talked about the various drugs in Shakespeare, I don't think we talked about that mysterious drug that Lady Mac uses to poison the possets. Well, but isn't it?
We will talk about it in our upcoming episode of Botanical Shakespeare.
Excellent. Because what I was going to say is, it often strikes, I mean, there are so many, like, convenient drugs in Shakespeare. Like, obviously, we talked a lot about Friar Lawrence, who just, like, the minute Juliet shows up with her problem, he immediately has this drug that conveniently knocks you out and counterfeits death for 42 hours. But, you know, Lady Mac just happens to have a drug that will make people go to sleep and look like, and make it like hard to tell if they're alive or dead.
Yep.
I mean, what is that drug and why does she have it?
Look for that information on our upcoming Botanical Shakespeare. also what poison is put on the tip of Laertes' sword in Hamlet?
Well,
it's
the unction that he purchased from a mountebank. And we talked about that one again. It's just like, I want to know why Laertes was at some carnival and just bought a deadly poison from some actor just to have around.
Because, you know, it's what you do.
You never know when you might need some deadly poison.
And then the last famous alcoholic beverage that I'd like to talk about in Shakespeare's time is Rhenish. Now, Falstaff would have regarded this as a thin potation. It is light, dry, unfortified white wine, probably from somewhere around the Rhine in Germany. In Hamlet, one of the gravediggers reminds Hamlet that Yorick once, quote, poured a flagon of Rhenish over his head. It sold for more than sack, but less than muscadel in the 16th century. Yeah, so those would be the famous.
Yeah, if it's, you know what, if it's unfortified and it's more expensive than sack, then you're not getting bang for your buck.
No, you are not getting bang for your buck. Shall we talk about the possibilities of mentions of drugs in the sonnets, Owen?
Yes, indeed. Which was the one that you were talking about before? It's in the 20s, right?
Yeah, I was talking about Sonnet 27.
27.
There is conjecture that in Sonnet 27, that Shakespeare is talking about some sort of hallucinogenic because, and I will read it, it goes, "Weary with toil, I haste me to my bed, the dear repose for limbs with travel tired. But then begins a journey in my head to work my mind when body's works expired. For then my thoughts from far where I abide intend a zealous pilgrimage to thee and keep my drooping eyelids open wide, looking on darkness which the blind do see. save that my soul's imaginary sight presents thy shadow to my sightless view, which like a jewel hung in ghastly night makes black night beauteous and her old face new. Though lust by day my limbs, by night my mind, for thee and for myself no quiet find. So I don't know about y'all, but if you have ever done any kind of hallucinogenic drug, that's exactly what it sounds like to me and to many scholars.
Indeed, indeed. It sounds like a little bit of a trip, does it not?
It totally sounds like a trip.
And there's also Sonnet 76,
yes,
which could be taken to specifically reference drugs. Check this out.
I have to say, might be one of my favorites.
This is how Sonnet 76 goes. Why is my verse so barren of new pride, so far from variation or quick change? Why with the time do I not glance aside to newfound methods and to compounds strange? Why write I still all one, ever the same, and keep invention in a noted weed, that every word doth almost tell my name, showing their birth and where they did proceed? Oh, no, sweet love, I always write of you, and you and love are still my argument. So all my best is dressing old words new, spending again what is already spent. For as the sun is daily new and old, so is my love still telling what is told. So is this a poem about a guy whose muse has left him and who is turning to drugs to sort of kickstart his creativity?
Yeah, I mean, they found traces of cannabis in those pipes.
Well, and the earliest discovery of cocaine in Europe, for God's
That's
sake.
That's right.
So, you know, are these the compounds strange that he's talking about? I mean, I know that he interestingly uses the phrase and keep invention in a noted weed. And that's tempting to us because of weed, obviously. But I think it's, you know, I don't know of any other contemporary references using weed the way we would to mean marijuana. But that newfound methods and to compound strange, to me, the compound strange are very plausibly recreational pharmaceuticals.
Absolutely. I mean, they also found myristic acid. I think we talked about that, mm-hmm, which is a chemical found in plants like nutmeg. Right, which is hallucinogenic. But here's the thing about the cannabis. I mean, it was widely available in Britain during Shakespeare's time. It was used in the production of paper, rope, and clothing. You know?
Well,
so there you go.
Compound strange, y'all.
That's right. And then there's one more that I think refers to substances. It's Sonnet 118. I will read that. It says, like as to make our appetites more keen, with eager compounds we our palate urge. As to prevent our maladies unseen, we sicken to shun sickness when we purge. Even so, being full of your ne'er cloying sweetness, to bitter sauces did I frame my feeding. And, sick of welfare, found a kind of meatness to be diseased ere that there was true needing. Thus policy and love, to anticipate the ills that were not, grew to faults assured, and brought to medicine a healthful state, which rank of goodness would by ill be cured. But thence I learn and find the lesson true, drugs poison him that so fell sick of you. Now, some hallucinogenics make you puke after you take them. Right? And he says, when we purge.
Yeah.
With eager compounds, we our palate urge.
And there's that compounds again.
That's right. That's
right. And for God's sake, he specifically uses the word drugs.
Literally specifically uses the word drugs. So I found this article.
But, you know, so can I say, like, let me interject here. You know, we've talked a lot on a lot of different episodes about whether you can infer Shakespeare's biography or anything from his life from his fiction, from his
right.
poems or his plays. And, you know, I'm leery of that. But I have to say, when you combine, and to me, stacking evidence on evidence is always a good thing. So looking at these poems that seem to reference, you know, possible drugs like it, with compound strange or eager compounds or that kind of thing, when you combine that with the fact that research has turned up cannabis and cocaine and other drugs and located them in Shakespeare's own house, well, now you have some plausibility.
Yeah, Absolutely.
You know, I mean, if we found drugs in Shakespeare's house, so it's fair. It's a fair guess to say that he used them. And then when you read these poems and they seem to have references to drugs, well, okay, now we can talk.
That's right. That's right. And I don't think that anybody can deny the fact that we found traces of these compounds.
Right. No, they did. They did. Yeah. They found pipes with drugs on them.
Here are some plays, speaking of drugs, that Shakespeare might have written. So I saved these and didn't tell these to Owen because I think they're extremely amusing. And one of my greatest aims in life is always to make Owen laugh. So here we go. Number one.
No, wait. So these are plays that Shakespeare might have written?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. One, Macbeth. Two, The Hempest. Three, Hash You Like It.
Oh, that one hurt.
Four, Henry the Spliffed. Five, Taming of the Shroom.
Okay, that one I like.
Yeah.
Taming of the Shroom is good.
Yeah. Six, Much a Dope About Nothing. Seven, and which would explain this play, Trippus Andronicus.
Oh, yes, it certainly would. Although, listen, you could easily say, I was at a party last night and I got Titus Andronicus.
Yeah, right. I love it. That's my new phrase. This one's a little bit of a stretch. Romeo and Juliet, for like E as in ecstasy.
Oh, I was like, what?
Yeah.
That's
a little bit of a stretch.
That's a little much, yeah.
Two Gentlemen of Columbia.
Okay.
But here's my favorite. Julius Caesar.
Well, you know, that has another connotation since Caesar was an epileptic.
I know. That's right.
So, you know, you could read that in a couple of ways.
I find that extremely amusing.
Where did that come from?
That came from an article I found online on the Free Library. It's a byline by Rosa Prince.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it.
I loved it.
Drug-related Shakespeare dad jokes. File that under that.
We'll have to come up with some more, I think.
Yeah, we could. I would bet you that we could write a list that would be funnier than that.
We're certainly going to give it a try.
Look for it. Maybe on Botanical Shakespeare, we'll introduce that.
That's right. What else, Owen?
I think that pretty much covers it.
It's a shorter than usual episode, but hey, you know, I have to go play the Wicked Witch of the West. So.
This is true. At Heinz Field. Check it out.
That's right. Oh, also, we just want to thank our listeners because we are now listed on the USA Arts Podcast, the Global Arts Podcast, the France All Podcasts Charts, the USA All Podcasts Charts, and the Global All Podcast Charts.
So dang.
Thank you so much to all of our listeners.
Thank you. Thank you to all our listeners, and thank you particularly to our international listeners. Thank you. We recently had our first download in Palestine, which brings us officially to 50 countries worldwide. Thanks especially to our German listeners, who are by far our most numerous listeners overseas. Please tell your friends if you like the podcast to listen in. And don't forget to visit our website at www.thebardcastudick.com, where if you are so inclined, you could throw some money our way on our Patreon page or even by pressing our PayPal button.
That's right. And the only continent we don't have a listener in, people, is Antarctica. So if you know anybody who's hanging with the polar bears, get them to listen to our podcast.
That's right.
That's right. And keep an eye out for more live streams of Shakespeare plays, which will probably be happening sometime.
In the near future, the Bardcast players will be presenting another Shakespeare play sometime very soon.
That's right. And remember,
it's Shakespeare, you dick.
Sounds like we're doing substances, Owen.
It's a little early in the day for me. I gotta drive.
I gotta go play the witch. Bye, guys.
Bye.
The preceding podcast was a production of Country Matters, LLC, copyright 2021, all rights reserved.